So the next question I'd like to ask you about is the barriers or challenges that have been encountered by teams or services that have been implementing Stepping On.
Okay, yes. As I was just saying, we could talk for a long time on this one. First of all, of course, education is training is what you think of, but there are many aspects to running a program that people don't think of first off, and it's when they get going often. So people really don't seem to plan ahead for that longer-term sustainability. So even things like recruitment, where are you going to find people have fallen to sustain this program? So while you think you work in a hospital system, you've got lots of people who have fallen, they're not ready to really say, yes, I'm going to go to a program. It's often when they go home. So in what context are you and how are you going to recruit people? If it's an organisation, 30% of people out there are falling. Uh-huh. How are you going to find the people and recruit them? So
so it's having people to attend the program, even when you offer it, you might have nobody coming.
Yes. Yeah, so how are you going to reach those people at risk? And you might have so many people in your organisation, but there'll be heaps more out there that can. So reaching those people, just planning the venue and the organisation, funding. Some people became quite creative in getting funding for various resources for the program, and so support from different community organisations for that. Things like having a champion for the cause is really important. So someone who really believes that this falls prevention is really important, and so on. So having support from higher up, sometimes you need the board to understand what it is to have a fall and that you can make a difference. Mm. People don't get it. Advocating for that, thinking about how you might evaluate your program so you can feed back to your managers, you know, why you're spending money on this program, why it's effective.
So the barriers you've talked about so far are about things like funding to run the program, finding a venue, so physical resources, recruiting and finding enough older people to run the program, even when you advertise it.
Mm-hmm.
What about roles and who is supposed to run these programs?
As occupational therapists, we developed the program and we wrote it up and we just did it, and we incorporated a physiotherapist to train people in the exercise program. Of course, after a period of time, we could do that, but it's fantastic having that that physiotherapist to do that aspect. We brought in other experts within it about vision impairment and so on. But in terms of the leadership, really, it's anyone with group skills or anybody who has the capacity to develop group skills. Mm. And that's not everyone. Occupational therapists often have good group skills. Some nurses have been involved in group work. Sometimes physiotherapists have been involved in group work. So for some people, it's a big leap to actually move into that role of facilitating a group program that's based on self-efficacy principles and a decision-making framework. It's not you're not just teaching content. Mm. You're actually getting people to reflect on and share their story. Storytelling is very much part of the group process, and this is all in the manual. So learning those skills is so it's learning. You know, you might know about falls prevention exercise, but you might not know about home safety, other things. And if you're leading it, you do have to understand those things so you can make sure that people are taking on board the key points. But you're also facilitating them to do the ownership and the sharing. So certainly, learning those group skills is really important. So it's quite a learning curve for a lot of people. Mm. So that education training, these groups do have a life that people say they see people change and they see change, and so it's very energising.
Yeah.
It's a very positive kind of group to run. So people have got it and do it. They do want to keep doing it. So it's not, it's sort of like, yeah. So if people see the benefit and value of it, then that's important. So in actual fact, the funding was really a small part of the kinds of things that were either barriers or were enablers of whether people would continue the program. if it became the core business. So if it wasn't core business, people didn't normally look at people things for older people or run groups. If it could become core business and part of, you know, that had more chance of continuing.
And how many groups would organisations run in a year? Because they run for, what, 18 weeks?
7 weeks.
Anywhere
from 1 to 5 or 6.
Okay. And how many people would attend each group?
We suggest 12. 12 is a good number, so it can be less than that, more than that.
Okay, and just a question following on about what sort of strategies or intervention were used to help health services, or indeed in America, it sounds like a whole state or a province, or
It's been rolled out now in Wisconsin. Have been rolling out a number of counties, and they're now going to fund 3 separate states to look at it and evaluate it more widely.
Yeah.
And I can't remember which the states are now. But I should know. Oregon's one. I can't remember the other ones.
Yeah.
So they'll be running the training sessions, and then people will go back to different organisations and set it up. And, you know, part of what we train people is what you need to set it up, so what resources you need, as well as the skills.
And I guess, so we've talked about strategies and interventions that have been available to help people change their practice. And how do you measure change in terms of whether the programs, I suppose the programs have been run or they haven't at the end of a year, and the number of people who have attended?
Mm.
Any other measures of change?
We've based some of our work on the ReAIM framework, which is ReAIM.org, which is a website which talks about reach. And I won't go through them now because I'll get them all wrong. But so evaluation, and so you look at the process. So it's kind of saying, well, you've done a randomised trial, now look at the process and what do you measure in each of those. And really reach is looking, well, what is my target population? How many of those have I reached? And it's quite broad, you know, it's very hard to look at a population perspective and how you reach so many different people. So you need to look at your population target, and then how many come into it. That's the simplest one of all. But of course, there are other ways of getting people to, you know, you can do a get up and go test to measure people's balance, and you can measure strength. You can measure Falls Behavioral Scale. The US Californian people were using my Falls Behavioral Scale, which was kind of neat. I hadn't suggested that here, which I should have, I suppose. Mm. But they were looking at whether people change their protective behaviours before and after the study.
So you're looking at 2 levels of change then. Mm. You're looking at the service change and whether they're capturing a population of older people who are at risk, and then you've got the individuals who come to the groups who get measured. So there's like a practitioner behaviour and the client. Yeah.
I guess, you know, people coming back.
Mm-hmm.
What's attendance like? Clearly with older people.
Would you expect people to come back to stepping on a second time?
Oh, we have had that happen.
Okay.
People have, you know, something's happened, you know, or they've missed sessions. We find the booster session really important.
Which is?
3 months later.
Uh-huh.
We get people to come back to a half day.
Uh-huh.
We also did a home visit in the intervention, which is interesting because the resources now, they all want to stop that. Because they run a group, they don't want to go into a visit. So some of the research has been looking at, well, can do a phone call. Mm-hmm. So we've encouraged people to do a phone call rather than do no follow-up, because the research we've done suggests that follow-up is very important for people to reflect back on what they've done, and it reinforces and just gives a booster for keeping on track. Because relapse happens all the time, whether it's exercise or thinking about these things and not being as aware for a while, or getting off track with the strategies that you need to put in place.
Okay, just wrapping up then, any other general advice about doing translational or implementation projects on a very broad scale as you have been?
I suppose, where do you start?
And you've got some other projects too. You've learned from them as well, I guess.
Yes, in the home safety, I still realise that I have to go and talk to occupational therapists about how you actually do a fall hazard OT safety audit, that it's not a regular OT visit. And also the meta-analysis that we've done that's shown that it is effective over a number of trials gives people the evidence that they can take back to show that resources should go into it, and also shows which at-risk groups are best investments. So disseminating that to therapists, I think, is really important. People like to hear that because it validates what they're doing. So I think it's a continual thing. You know, we think we've done the evidence, that's it. But it's actually not out there, and people don't always use it. You know, I'll come across a paper and they've done a, you know, adherence of falls prevention stuff, and I'll look at the kinds of recommendations that they've made, and they're nothing to do with fall hazards. So, you know, what was the OT doing? So, so when you look at practice change, you could look at knowledge, skills, you know, all sorts of, you know, how, as well as, is it continuing? Are you doing it?
Okay, well, thank you very much.